I'm Danielle McCartan, and we'll talk all things New York sports right up till 3 a.m. right here in New York City and beyond. So thanks for tuning in. Ray Jarvis and I are live right here in Lower Manhattan, 888-808-1019. Call us up. Be part of the conversation tonight. And thank you for making us part of your holiday. Merry Christmas. Buon Natale. Happy Hanukkah. Happy Kwanzaa. Merry and happy everything to you and yours from here. Us, right here at The Fan. As I'm sitting there today, watching much... let me say it like this. I'm sitting there watching the Christmas Day football games. And I'm watching as much of them as I possibly can. Because... you know, everything's going on, you know, presents and guests and food and help and all, right? So I'm sitting there watching the football games as much as I can. I'm reminded of two things as I'm sitting there today. One, I hate watching sports on streaming services because they hold you captive. They hold you hostage during the commercial breaks. There was zero desire, at least in my household, during that 1 p.m. game, to switch over the entire apps on the TV from Netflix to actual TV to check in with the Knicks. I'm sorry. I hate how streaming games make you choose. It's like one or the other. There's no channel surfing, checking in here or there. It's one or the other. And number two, I'm reminded what good football looks like or what it's supposed to look like. Lamar Jackson creating 8 seconds for himself to throw a touchdown pass. Mark Andrews, a tight end, a position that has not been utilized properly in New York football in, I mean, I don't know how long. It's been a long time. But you've got Andrews popping out into space, calling for the ball, making a catch, and rumbling 67 yards down the sideline. When was the last time we saw something like that here? You've got Travis Kelce making franchise history in a good way, not in a 10-game worst losing streak in franchise history kind of way. I mean, you watched it. You have eyeballs. You have brains. I bet you were having the same conversations in your living room that we were having in ours. What is going to make New York football relevant again? That is the essential question for tonight's opening. We'll take the Giants first. The aforementioned Giants. A 10-game losing streak. The Giants have not won a game at MetLife Stadium since week 17 of last season, January 8th. Do you know who has won more recent games in that stadium than them? The New Jersey Devils and the New York Rangers. And they don't even play the sport of football. Not a single win at home this season in front of the hardworking fans that spend their hard-earned money on apparel, jerseys, tickets, concessions, parking fees that are astronomical. And maybe even more important, these people dedicate their time to show up for a team who is not showing up for them. Early last week, I went to an event hosted by Jermaine Illuminor. He took sick kids from the Tom Coughlin J Fund Foundation for a shopping spree in Target in Clifton. It was an amazing event. I felt so lucky to be a part of it. I covered it for On New Jersey, so you go ahead. I think they're going to air it on Monday, so you can go ahead and watch that. The kids are absolutely over the moon when they learn what the surprise was that night. And Illuminor brought some offensive lineman friends to help him out. No Andrew Thomas and no Evan Neal, by the way. But he, John Michael Schmitz, and Marcellus Johnson all told me very adamantly that these players are working their tails off behind the scenes. And I'm going to put those videos out hopefully tomorrow, if not definitely Friday, at Coach MCCARTAN. Those and more, by the way. But that tells me that the decision to tailspin is orchestrated from the top down. This isn't the players quitting on the season. This is a strategic tank job. And I was sitting there in Atlanta on Sunday with my dad in the stands, section 224, row 3, seats 1 and 2. And after that second pick 6 by Drew Lock, which, if I'm not mistaken, it was the first play of the second half, I turned to my dad And I asked him incredulously, Dad, one pick six wasn't enough to bench him. Two isn't either? I mean, come on, man. What are you doing? And by the way, Drew Lock, he's starting again Sunday for some unknown, illogical, sense-defying reason. Yet coming out of the half, as I'm sitting in my seat, I just so happened to notice Tommy DeVito warming up on the sideline with Wandale Robinson and Malik Nabers, and I'm not positive, but I think it might have been Darius Slayton too. All starting wide receivers. Lock was not. Give DeVito a shot, man. Like, what is going on here? The Giants are actively not trying to win games. Joe Shane and Brian Daboll must know, have to know, that they're safe. Because if they weren't safe, they'd be starting the best quarterback to help them win games. They would yank Drew Lock after not one, but two pick sixes. They must know that they're safe. So, sitting at a historically embarrassing, franchise worst. Think about how long the Giants have been an NFL franchise. They're one of the originals. Franchise worst losing streak of 10 games. What is it going to take to make the Giants relevant again? Here's my suggestion. I want to see a 3-year strategic plan that starts with a letter penned directly from John Mara's desk directly to the fans. This letter should take the form of the one that the Rangers sent to their fans on February 8th of 2018. There's a lot of crossover between the fan bases. It was well-received by Rangers fans for the most part. I can't imagine it wouldn't be well-received by Giant fans. But in that letter, John Mara, you have to appeal to their loyalty. Because they have been. You have to highlight the team's success. You have to promise to keep fans informed. And you have to vow to build the foundation of the next Super Bowl contender. I know I would appreciate not knowing every nitty-gritty of the plan, but, you know, just I would appreciate knowing the direction of this team. Because right now, it doesn't seem like there is one to me. And it's worth noting that in the six full seasons since the Rangers sent that letter to their fans, the Rangers made the playoffs four times, including two trips to the conference finals. Patience is a virtue. This is what I want to see from the New York Giants, a plan communicated directly from the owner's desk. One that does not involve the Giants selecting a quarterback in this season's draft. No quarterback, let me say it again, no quarterback is going to fix this team. You trade back a bit, you stockpile some picks, and you build it out the right way once and for all from the inside out. Are Joe Shane and Brian Daboll the duo to do it? Ask me earlier in this season, I would say definitely, no doubt about it. Even halfway through the season, no doubt about it. But with all of this losing going on, I mean, me personally, it's getting increasingly more difficult to justify bringing them back. For the Giants, the term rock bottom continues to get redefined each and every passing week, unfortunately. But not to be outdone by the pitiful New York Jets. Do you remember the days of Kyrie and KD and James Harden in Brooklyn? The epic failure that was? Well, it's like, move over, Jack and Rose. The Jets, with a first ballot Hall of Fame quarterback, are in the exact same boat as them. I mean, I read that article. I'm sure you did too. In The Athletic. I believe every word of that Rosenblatt, Russini, and Silver article. Every one of them. this Jets team is an absolute, abject, disaster dumpster fire because this team's owner runs it like he's playing franchise mode in Madden, the video game. That's not how this works, Mr. Ambassador Woody. I mean, you knew it was bad. You knew Woody Johnson was inept. But you really didn't know how inept. And these series of articles that have been put out by these authors have been terrifyingly enlightening about how inept Woody Johnson and company and family are at running a football franchise. I mean, I was infuriated reading that stuff that those three journalists put in that article. I mean, I actually had to, at one point, I closed my laptop, I walked around for a little bit, and I had to go back to it. There are three things in that article that I could not believe. And we'll tie this back into, how do you make the Jets relevant again? Number one, Woody Johnson actually ex-nayed a trade for Jerry Jeudy, which was a move that left the Broncos front office mystified. But Johnson ex-nayed the trade based on the fact that his player rating, Jerry Jeudy's player rating in the Madden NFL football game, the video game, wasn't high enough. And according to that report in The Athletic, it wasn't the first time this man has cited Madden ratings in team personnel decisions. Are you kidding me? Do you think Woody Johnson's playing Madden, sitting there at home playing Madden? No, it's his sons that are doing it. These teenage sons, adolescent sons, have the same level of input as scouts that have been doing this their entire lives. Is this just a game to you, Mr. Ambassador? Because that's what people have to call him around the building, you know. Mr. Ambassador, tell me why I should care. Tell me why I should invest my hard-earned money on your tickets, on your merchandise, on your parking fees, on your concessions. And why, for me personally, more important, working two, about to be three jobs, why should I invest my very little, very tiny, minute, minuscule free time that I have in my schedule to either watch or attend the games of this Mickey Mouse franchise that you are in control of? Jerry Jeudy is closing in on 1,100 yards this season with Jameis Winston throwing him the ball. The Jets don't have a single 1,000-yard receiver yet this season with Aaron Rodgers throwing him the ball. What's wrong with that pitcher, Mr. Ambassador? And talk about, number two, nepotism. Nepotism, my favorite word. Woody Johnson's sons have the keys to that franchise, man. They are allowed to, and they are allowed to bring guests into the Jets' private sacred space on game days, the locker room. A vignette in that feature that I could not believe was one from the locker room following that Halloween game. That was a game I was at, actually. Fantastic. First half, they were chanting, everybody was chanting, sell the team, sell the team. Second half was good. Garrett Wilson made a fantastic grab in the end zone. You know, the whole thing. Jets ended up winning that game. And I had to leave. I wanted to leave because I had school. It was a Thursday night football. I had school the next day. Had to be up at 6 o'clock. And I left in the fourth quarter with like 13 minutes to go just to beat the traffic out of that dump. Anyway, Rodgers was all ready, all set. He had the football in his hands to give the game ball to Jeff Ulbrich, which is customary when, you know, a head coach wins his first football game. They get the game ball. Okay, well, that was all well and good until Brick Johnson jumped in, stole the show, and gave an adolescent, immature, expletive-filled speech to the players and gave the first game ball to Garrett Wilson. And then posted it to Instagram. This is not a joke. No repercussions. And I found Brick Johnson's Instagram, but unfortunately, it's private. Probably since Halloween. It's private. Then Woody got involved, ripped the ball from Aaron Rodgers' hands, and gave it to Jeff Ulbrich. These two instances took the wind out of an amped locker room that night, according to that article. One of the players, granted anonymity, who was in the locker room, said, quote, "It was the most awkward, cringeworthy, brutal experience." And not only that, Woody Johnson and his adolescent sons, his immature sons, even criticize the players in the locker room on multiple different occasions. Like, is that a joke? The balls on these teenagers. Joe Douglas, as quoted in the article, said, quote, "I answered to a teenager about the decision-making process that's going on there." That simply cannot be. The Johnsons are the problem. And until they see themselves as that, this is not going to change. So back to the main essential question. How do you make the Jets relevant again? Really? The answer is pretty simple. Roger Goodell, are you listening? Jeff Bezos, Steve Cohen, are you listening? You need to step in. This Jets team ownership is an absolute joke, punchline, for too long. It's clear. This is just a game to this owner. He is not in the business of winning. The Johnsons need to sell this team and go find another pet project to go ahead and ruin. Because you know what? Apathy. Apathy is worse than loathing. I'm at that point. I am apathetic to this team. I can't get behind this team anymore. I've had it. And one of the anonymous players quoted in the article, you know what he said? This was a quote from the article. "There are organizations where it is all set up for you to win. It feels completely different with the Jets. It's the most dysfunctional place imaginable." Wow. Wow. And you know what? I believe it. And I see it more clearly than ever. Thanks to Diana Rossini, Zach Rosenblatt, and in this particular article, I don't know his first name. Last name is Silver. So, how do you make New York football relevant again? Well, I got two ideas. What are yours? 888-808-1019. Give me a call. My name is Daniel McCartan. With you till 3 here on The Fan.